Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on top of Nun Bet and Aleph. The Mishnah says, Tinoket Sheviat Shtei Se'arot, a young girl that has reached the age of puberty and has two pubic hairs, O Chaletzet O Mityabemet, since she is now of age, she has a choice when it comes to Yibum, either to perform Chalitza or to ask Chalitza be performed, or Mityabemet, she can be taken as a wife by this brother. V'chayevet B'chol Mitzvot Amorot B'Torah, and this makes her of age, and therefore, she's now obligated in all the mitzvot of the Torah. V'chein tinok. The same thing is true by a male, by a young boy, she'evi shtei se'arot, that he has two pubic hairs, chayav b'chol mitzvot amudot b'Torah. He's now chayav in all the mitzvot of the Torah. V'ra'ui liot ben sorer u'more. And this also qualifies and brings him to the age in which he can be a ben sorer u'more. Mishyavi shtei se'arot, ad she'akif zkan atachton, from the time that he has two pubic hairs, until the point in time where the lower beard is covered, v'lo elyon, we're not talking about the upper beard, el shedibru chachamim l'shon nikia. Chachamim used euphemism in order to explain this. They're obviously not talking about the beard of the individual on their face, but rather the beard by the makom ha'erva, that if it's covered in hair, if that area is covered in hair, that is the period of time in which a young boy can be a ben sorer u'more, from the time that he comes of age with two sarot, until Yakif Zkana Tachton, to the point in time where the lower beard is covered, or the Makom Erva has been encircled by hair, that is the period in time brings him into the partial of Ben Sorer Moreh, and that has to do with the fact that he can only be a Ben. He can only be a child, but not someone who is Ra'ui to be a father. So it leaves a very, very short period of time from the time he comes of age until he is disqualified from being a ben sorer u'more because of his ability to be a father at that point in time. Tinoket she'hevia shtei se'arot, a tinoket, a young girl who has reached the age of puberty with two hairs, eina yochola lema'ein, she's now disqualified from performing mi'un, something that we'd seen earlier, because only a ktana, only when she's a minor may she perform mi'un. This already makes her of age, and therefore she can no longer perform mi'un. Rabbi Omer, ad she'yirbe'a shachor, until the black predominates, until the black is evident, a larger shiur than shtei se'arot, than two hairs, the Gemara will discuss. The Gemara goes back now and tries to dissect the Mishnah, which is, Kevan ditnan chayevet b'chol ha'mitzvot amurot b'Torah, since there is a catch-all phrase about a young girl who has reached the age of puberty, that she's now obligated in all mitzvot of Torah, o chaletzer o mityabemet lomerli. Why do you have to mention chalitza and yibum? Chalitza and yibum are just another example of mitzvot amurot b'Torah. So if you have that general principle, why do you have to, in this particular case, mention chalitza and yibum? It says, lafuke mid Rabbi Yossi, because it comes to teach us the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Damar ish katuv parsha. In the parsha of yibum, it uses the term ish. We've said before that the ish is a defined term, which means that someone who has come of age. So since the Torah says, im lo yachpot ha'ish, that ish tells us that it must be a gadol who is performing the chalitza, but by the female, the isha, there is no such term that's used in parshat ha'yibum and parshat chalitza. So Rabbi Yossi believes that is because only the boy, the man, has to be of age, but the isha, the girl, does not have to be of age, and therefore the isha ben gdola u ben ktana, she can be either a minor or of age. Either one is qualified for chalitza. Kamash Malan, our Mishnah is telling us that that's not the case. We do not subscribe to Rabbi Yossi's understanding of Parshat Chalitza, but rather we have an equation or a hekesh between Ish and Isha, and therefore just like the man has to be of age, so too the woman has to be of age, and that is made obvious by our Mishnah that says that Chalitza and Yibum can only be formed by a young girl who has reached the age of puberty. D-I-T-S-H-T-S-H-R-O-T-I-N. So if she has reached the age of puberty, then yes, she can perform Chalitza Yibum. Oh, lo, lo. My time. Well, what's the reason behind those that argue Rabbi Yossi? Isha Kish, that the Isha is the same din as the Ish. There's a hekesh between them. And therefore, just like the Ish has to be of age, so too the Isha does. Became in the Tano. So then, since the Tana now continues afterwards, Vechena Tinok Shevi Beit Harot, that the young boy who has reached the age of puberty and has two hairs, he has the same din as a Tinoket. Well, we already know what the din of Tinoket is that she's Chayevet B'chol Mitzvot HaMorot B'Torah. So when you say v'chein ha'tinok, and so too by a male, then why do you have to repeat the phrase afterwards, which is chaya b'chol mitzvot amura b'torah lomali? Why do you have to mention that phrase again? We already know that from the parallel being drawn between tinoket and tinok. So just like by tinoket, puberty brings them to the point where They are chayevet in all the mitzvot, so too by a tinok, it should be the same thing if you're comparing them. The reason that they added in that phrase is mishum tekubay the mitnei. They needed to add the additional information by a male of ra'oi liot ben sorer umere that qualifies him to be a ben sorer umere, and that's why the Mishnah wrote this idea of his chayav b'chol mitzvot umerot b'torah. It says tanin echad zimna. We have already seen this definition of when a child is ra'oi, qualified to be a ben sorer umere. We already know from another Mishnah in Sanhedrin where the Gemara talks about ben sorer umere. Imadayu ben sorer umere k'shiavish tei sarot v'ashiyakiv zakan atachton v'lo yon. So identical to what's brought in our Mishnah, just on location in Sanhedrin, where it's speaking about Ben Sorer Umereh. So what's brought in our Mishnah is obviously just a sidebar, a parenthetical addition to the Mishnah. It's not the primary reason the Mishnah is speaking. So to say that the Mishnah added on the Lashon of Chayav Kol HaMitzvot because of Ben Sorer Umereh seems unlikely. Where it says, Enoch Hanami, you're right, that it didn't need to write it. I did the Parish Milid Tinoket, Kimafarish Nami Milid Tinok. It's a literary style. It's balanced in the Mishnah. Just like the terminology that's used, or the literary style that's used by the Tinoket, the Mishnah goes and repeats that by a Tinok. Again, I always point out in these types of situations that if you're really learning Torah Shebaal Peh, when you are memorizing Mishnayot, it makes a lot of sense to have that type of parallel in the Mishnah, because it's much easier to memorize when you have that type of parallel structure. Tinoket is da-da-da, and then Tinok is da-da-da. And since it says, Chayav b'chol mitzvot, Chayav b'chol mitzvot, it's much easier in terms of Torah Shebaal Peh to memorize when the late of the Mishnah is done in that way. Right, so now the Gemara continues. Tinoket shivia bit sarot. Amrei bo, amrei belazer, halochak Rabbi Yehuda. The halocha is actually like Rabbi Yehuda, that she can perform miyun until Yirbet Ashachor. But, umode Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda agrees, shim niv'ala lachar shivia shtei sarot. If she has biyah after she reached the age of puberty, shuvah ena yochol lema'in. At that point, she cannot perform miyun anymore. The idea being that she is qualified to perform miyun until she reaches a point where she's either married d'oraita or she's a full-fledged gadol. So over here, if after she reached puberty, she has bia with her husband, that consummates the marriage when she's already of age, and now she can no longer use miyun because she's now married min haTorah, and she will require a get. So even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, if she's had bia after that two sarot, after puberty, then for sure she needs a get to get divorced, and miyun will not work. But if she's yet to have biyah, then we give her until the time of Yirbe Ashachor to still perform miyun and undermine it. Chavroi the Rav Kahano, so the Chevra, the Talmidei Chachamim, that were peers of Rav Kahano, Sovar the Mevad Uvda K'Rabbi Yehuda. So the peers of Rav Kahano, Sovar the Mevad Uvda K'Rabbi Yehuda. They were going to pass on the locha like Rabbi Yehuda, but afal gav de nivala. Even though she already had bia, amalu Rav Kahana, loka chaya maseh bibitosh Rabbi Yishmael. Then we have an instance, a case of this, with the daughter of Rabbi Yishmael. She bought the Beit Midrash, the main. She came to the Beit Midrash in order to perform miyun, ubna murkavala al ktefa. And she already had her son riding on her shoulders. Ve'oto ayom, and happened to be on that day, huskru d'varav sh Rabbi Yishmael Beit Midrash. The drush of Rabbi Yishmael was mentioned in the Beit Midrash. Ubachta b'chiyah gudala b'beit midrash. And there was a great cry, or rabta b'chiyah gudala b'beit midrash. It's not clear if this is the daughter of Rabbi Shmuel who cried, or the students, the Talmidim that were in the Beit Midrash cried, because of the irony. Amru davar sh'amar oto tzadiki kashel bozaro. The exact case about which Rabbi Shmuel spoke, this is what's going to affect his daughter, his offspring. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Yishmael. We have a quote here in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, Behi lo nitpasa asura. This is talking about a woman who is a sota. And it says over there, Behi lo nitpasa, if she was not forced, she's not forced into the situation, meaning that it wasn't a rape, it wasn't against her will, then asura. Then she is restricted from going back to her husband, and restricted from marrying the boel, the one who she supposedly had the extramarital affair with. Ha nitpasa. If she forcibly had bi'ah, forcibly put in that position, she didn't have a choice about it, she wasn't a willing participant, then muteret. She's allowed to return to her husband because she wasn't a willing participant. V'yesh l'cha acheret, because of the miut of he, so Rabbi Shmuel said there's another additional case, she'afu pishlo nitpasa, even though she was not forced in the situation, means she was a willing participant, muteret, and yet she still is permitted. V'ezuzu, she kidusha, kidushei tot. If her marriage was done on a false premise, there was a condition in the marriage, and because of that condition, the marriage dissolves. Well, when the marriage dissolves, then she's no longer married. She's no longer married, even if she was in a consensual relationship that seemed like an extramarital affair. It's really not, because she wasn't married. Even though she has her son riding on her shoulders, she can perform miyun and walk away. So here, the suggestion is that Rabbi Shmuel's drasha applies to, number one, kiddushei ta'ot, a case where there is some underlying problem with the kiddushin, the original marriage, which causes the marriage to dissolve. If there is no marriage, then there's no extramarital affair, and that's why she's muteret. The same thing applies to a ktana. A ktana who performs miyun. Miyun is an undermining of the marriage retroactively. It's a dissolution of the marriage as if it never happened. And this ktana can even do this even when her child is riding on her shoulders. She's able to do this. Now she can't be a ktana. She has to be of age because now she has a child. If that's the case, we see here that she's allowed to dissolve the marriage even though she's of age. That is because the miyun works the same way. By dissolution of the marriage, that means that every bi'ah that came afterwards wasn't a bi'ah, was not cohabitation for the sake of marriage. And Rashi points this out, even when she becomes of age, that remains so. V'lo amrinan bi'ilat shebao mishigadla havu kedushin. We do not say that the cohabitation that she had after she came of age then equates to kedushim. Kasavar, because the premise is called a bo'el adat kedushim arishonim hu bo'el. Whenever a person cohabitates with their wife, they do that based on the original marriage. V'lo nitkavein nachzor lekadshah. He's not intending now to remarry her with the bi'ah today. He's having bi'ah with today because he thinks he was married to her based on the original kiddushin. So if we dissolve the original kiddushin, then there is no new kiddushin that comes about over here. V'nimnu v'gamru. And then they came to a count on this. I mean, they wanted to come to a conclusion on the locha. Ad matay abat mima'enet. Until when can a girl be mima'en? Ad shetavi shtei se'arot. Until she reaches the age of puberty where she has shtei se'arot. And that's the cutoff. After that point in time, if she has bi'ah, it's clear that she is considered to be married, and we do not hold like this position of Rabbi Yishmael. So the conclusion of the Gemara, this Psak Alocha, where they came together, comes to the Ma'at Rabbi Yishmael, to say that Rabbi Yishmael is wrong, that if she has bi'ah after she comes of age, then she's for certain married, like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and not like Rabbi Yishmael says that it's premised on the ritual Kiddushin, and therefore any bi'ah that she has afterwards, if she still performs miyun, it's fine. So Mara says, Perush v'lo avod uvda. Because of what Rav Kahana introduced into the case over here, his peers did not pass on the locha and allow her to perform miyun, even though, based on Rabbi Shmuel's memra, she should have been able to perform miyun. Rabbi Yitzchak v'tamidei Rabbi Chanina avod uvda to Rabbi Yehuda. They pass on like Rabbi Yehuda v'af agav de nivala, even though she had had bi'ah after she had reached the age of puberty. Azar Rabbi Shimon bar Abba amra kamei de Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shimon bar Abba told Rabbi Yochanan about what had transpired. Azar Rabbi Yochanan amra kamei de Rabbi Yehuda nisiya. And Rabbi Yochanan presented this problem to Rabbi Yehuda nisiya. And shadar bausha b'avkua. Rabbi Yehuda nisiya sent over, the modern way balash means a spy, but back then it meant like the sheriff or the police. He sent them in b'avkua and they took her away from her second husband. They said that she's really not divorced. She's married min haTorah to the first husband, and she doesn't have a get, so she can't be together with that second husband. Am Rav Chista Mamar Ukva Lo Shir Be'ashachor Mamash. When Rabbi Yehuda Mishnah says Yir Be'ashachor, doesn't literally mean that the black predominates or there's overwhelming black in that area. Ella Kadesh Teu Shtei Sarot Shochvot Vinirot. It has to be the amount that it's two hairs that are, when they lay down, when they're flat down, that they are seen, obviously. When they're laying there, they're easily identified, they're easily seen. It's not something that is just emerging or hard to see. As if it's the black predominates, or it's clear that there's black in that area. I mean, this is something that's easily discernible. Rav Amar Shtei Sarot Amikifot Misafa Desafa. That you have two, have to have two sarot that reach from edge to edge. Side to side. Amar Rav Chelu Amar Rav Huna Shtei Sarot Shemru Tzarech Shei Bikran Gumot. The two hairs that we're talking about here have to have hair follicles that they're coming out of. Rav Malki Amar Rav Adar Ba'ava Gumot Afo Pi She'ene Se'arot. Even if they're just hair follicles and there's no hair, that is sufficient to be classified as puberty and of coming of age. Now, after we have this memra from Amalkio, we actually have a statement by Amar Rav Chanina, Breid Ravika, that there are actually six times in Shas where the name Rav Malkio or Rav Malkia appear. And because their names are so similar, it's easily confused which one said what thing. The six instances, Rav Chanina now breaks down into three and three, three which are authored by my Malkio, and three that are authored by my Malkio. And he lays it out for us. He says, Shibud, Shvachot, Vigumot. These three instances, Rav Malkio was the author of the statement. Blurit, Efer Makle, and Gvina, Rav Malkio was the author of the statement. As far as what the cases are, the case of Shipud is actually a spit or a skewer made out of wood in the Gemara in Beitza. After it's been used to cook on Yom Tov, it's really muksa. But over there, Rav Malkio gives permission to remove it in a klach or yad, in an unusual manner, and place it in the corner to remove it from being a problem in terms of consuming the food, even though it's muksa, because you're allowed to remove danger when it could cause problems. So you're allowed to remove the spit or the skewer from the food on Yom Tov. Shvachot is actually a Mishnah in Ketubot. Mishnah in Ketubot enumerates a woman, depending on how wealthy she is, how wealthy her husband or she is, she will get more and more maidservants to take care of her. In the Mishnah over there, Rabbi Lezer says that no matter how wealthy she is, there's still a minimum amount of work that she should do, because a woman who does no work is unhealthy for her, and therefore, at minimum, she has to do certain things within the household. Gumot is our case right here, that the hair follicles are enough, you don't need actual hair to be determined as shtei se'arot. The case of Blorit is a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. That is the way that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah used to get a certain type of haircut that indicated or demonstrated their closeness to the Avodah Zarah. They shaved away the sides of their heads, left the center of the head, plus a ponytail in the back and some hair in the front. There it talks about a Jewish barber who is cutting such a non-Jew's hair. Magnifying or qualifying that Mishnah, he says that he should not touch his blurit. He should not cut that area, because that's involved with Avodah Zarah. Over there we have the statement of Rav Malkia that the amount of area that he has to cease to cut is three etzba'ot around his blurit. Ephraim Makle is a case in Makot, and over there Rav Malkia says that one should not place ashes on top of a cut because it looks like Tovet Kaka, it looks like one is creating a tattoo on the body, and therefore one should cease from doing such activity. Ugvina. Vina is in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah once again. Why is it that the Chachamim were oser the cheeses of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so that we may not eat their cheeses? Over there it's explained by Rav Malkia, that is because they are machlikin penei agvina b'shuman achazir. They used to baste the cheese with the fat of a pig. Lard was put on top of the cheeses on it as a top layer, and that's why one may not eat the cheeses. So these are six cases found throughout Shas. And Rav Chanina now lays out for us that Shibud, Shvachot, and Gumot are authored by Rav Malkio. As we say in our Gemara, Gumot is Rav Malkio. And Blorit, Efer, Makle, and Gvina are authored by Rav Malkio. Rav Papa says that that is not exactly true, but rather Amar Matnitin Umatnita Rav Malkio. When it comes to Tanaic works, a Mishnah or a Braita, those statements are authored by Rav Malkio. Shemaitita, on the other hand, if it's an independent Memra, then it's Rav Malkio. Bissimono, and the way to remember that is Matnita Malkita. That Braitot or Matnita, the Mishnayot, which is in the female form, is associated with the Malkita, the queen, and therefore Rav Malkia is the one who is the author of those positions. The Gemara says, "My Benayu." What's the difference between them? The Gemara's answer is Ike Benayu Shvachot. The difference between them is this case of Shvachot. So just going back now, Rav Chanina says that Rav Malkio is the author of the position of Shipur, Shvachot, and Gumot. Rav Malkio is the author of the positions in Blurit, Efer Makle, and Gvina. Within those six items, three of them are qualifications of Mishnayot, Braitot, or Psak Halacha associated with a Mishnah or Braita. And that is the case of Blurit, the case of Shvachot, and the case of Gvina. Blurit, we discussed that the Mishnah says one must desist from cutting the hair of the Avodah Zarah, and that the qualification comes, it has to be three etzbot away. Shvachot, we also mentioned in Mishnah and Ketubot, that the woman must do a minimum amount of work. There's a psak halacha there, like Rabbi Elazar's opinion in the Mishnah. And Gvina is also the iser to have cheeses of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. What is the problem? There, the explanation given. So Rav Papa says, those positions are all authored by Malkia. Now, Rav Chanina already said that Blurit and Gvina are authored by Rav Malkia, Shvachot was the middle one for Rav Malkia, which he now shifts over to Rav Malkia. So because of that, that's what the Gemara says, Shvachot is the nafkamina. The interesting thing is that what's not mentioned over here is Efer Makleh. Because the case of Shipud in Beitzah about the Muksa with regards to a spit, Efer Makleh, the problem of putting ashes onto a cut, and the case of Gumot, our Gemara over here, our Shmaitata, our independent statements that are made not necessarily in the context of a Mishnah or a Braita, but just independent statements. And according to what Rav Papa says, those were all authored by Rav Malkio. Now, Rav Hanina already had Shipud and Gumot under Rav Malkio, but Efer Makleh, he had the second one in that list, he has under Rav Malkio. And now he shifts that over to Rav Malkio. So Tosafot and Rashi all ask, what happened here? Why did the Gemara say the only difference between them is Shvachot and not Efer Makleh? So Rashi seems to indicate it here, the Rashbam in other places, in Shas, in Tosafot, says, when the Gemara says Shvachot, it doesn't just mean Shvachot, it means Shvachot and the one opposite it. The second one in each list gets switched. The second one under Rav Malkio gets switched to Rav Malkia, and the second one under Rav Malkio, which is Efer Makleh, gets switched over to Rav Malkio. So it means
Shvachot
and its pair, Efer Makleh, they both are switched. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here that that's not true. The only one that he says Rav Hanina switches over is Shvachot, because that's a Mishnah and Braita. And what Rabbeinu Tam suggests is that the statement of Rav Papa here is only about Mishnayot and Braitot. Mishnayot, anything that is a qualification or a psak halacha with regards to Mishnah or Braita, that's definitely authored by Rav Malkia. And that's why he gives a siman for that, only by Rav Malkia. When it comes to Maitata, he says some of them are Rav Malkio, and some of them are Rav Malkio. He doesn't say anything definitive about it. The only statement that he makes is definitive is that Mishnah Braito is Rav Malkio. So the only thing that gets switched over is Shvachot. Based on that, or Rabbeinu Tamzik's understanding, then four of the Memrot are Rav Malkio. That is, Blorit, Efer Makleh, Gvina, and Shvachot. On the other hand, Rav Malkio only has two, which is this of Shipud and Gumot, the one found in our Gemara. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Tam reads it, in order the only difference, or nafkamina between them to be Shvachot, he has to leave Efer Makleh with Rav Malkia. So Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Li Mar Zutra, Kasha Ba Rav Hanina Misura. So Rav Hanina Misura had a problem with this statement about Gumot, about the fact that the hair follicles are sufficient, and you actually don't need Shtei Searot. Lo Lishtame Tano, Vashmeinon Gumot? He says, how could it be that throughout the entire Tanaic body of work, we never have such a statement. Here we have an Amora telling us that Gumot, hair follicles, are enough, and yet we don't find a single Mishnah or Braita that has any mention of that, any Tana that says that. So Gemara says, no, Iyashmi Inon Gumot, had any Tana explained to us Gumot, Havamin, I would have thought, Achei Shtei Sarot Bishtei Gumot, I would think that you would have to have a minimum of two hairs in two hair follicles. But that's not true. Kamash Malan, Dafilu, Se'arot, Beguma Achat. Even two hairs in a single hair follicle is enough. So that's why nobody or no Tana ever mentioned the Gumot, because had they simply mentioned Shtei Gumot, we wouldn't know what that means. Two hair follicles. Does that mean you actually need two hair follicles? Or is it two hairs that come out of a follicle? And the Kamash Malan is, that's the why Rav Malkio comes along and says, Eino Hanami, you need Shtei Se'arot out of follicles. But the answer is, these Shtei Gumot don't have to literally be two hair follicles. It could be one hair follicle that is holding two hairs. Is that possible that one hair follicle actually has two hairs in it? Vaktiv. So it says in Iyov, Asher bis'ara yishufeni, virba pitzai chinam. Hashem, that you brought to me a tempest that crushed me, virba pitzai chinam, and you made my wounds many for no reason. So this is Iyov questioning why Hashem is bringing all this bad to him. That he opened up questions about Hashem's behavior with a storm or a tempest. Hashem responded to him through a storm. Through a tempest questioned Hashem. And that was the pasuk that we just read. Maybe this great wind or storm passed in front of you. And therefore you got confused between me and another Iyov. So Bisara Shivua, Hashem responds to him in a storm or a tempest. Vayan Hashem et Iyov. Hashem answers Iyov towards the end of Iyov. It says, Minasara Vayomar. Now we don't have the continuation of the pasuk here. The Gemara invents what the conversation was. There in the Perek in Iyov, it has its own conversation. But Hashem responded to Iyov through the storm or the tempest and said, So the Gemara's play here is actually going to be on the fact that over here, in the Pasuk where Hashem responds to him, it's Bisara with a Samech, which means a storm. Bisara that we mentioned back in the earlier Perek, in Perek Tet of Iyov, where Iyov is questioning Hashem, over there, Sara is spelled with a sin. Now there, the Pashup Shat is that it's a tempest, but it's spelled with a sin, which is from the word Se'ar, of hair. And therefore, the Gemara darshins on that, that the conversation related to something about hair, which is, Yomar, and so Hashem says, Elav Shuteh Shibolam. You fool. Harbe nimin berati brosho shel adam. There are many hairs that I made on a person's head. V'chol nima v'nima berati lo guma. And every hair has a hair follicle. Bifnei atzma for itself. Shelo yushtaim yonkot miguma achat. So no two hairs come out of the same hair follicle. Shimale shtaim yonkot miguma achat. As it ever comes about that two hairs come out of a single hair follicle. Machish mo'orinam shel adam. It would take away. You could either say this is a euphemism, the life force of a person, meaning that the person would not live, or that you could take it literally, that his eyesight would be dimmed, that he would be blinded by such a thing. Hashem continues, Guma bigumalo nitchalifli. I don't make any mistake between one hair follicle and another hair follicle when it comes to creating a person. Iyov, Iyov nitchalifli. I would get mixed up in two different people, you and another Iyov. That's not possible. So Gemara's question is, well, if our Kamash Malon is that two hairs that come out of a single hair follicle, that is determinant, how could that be? Well, here we have a statement from Iyov, from the Midrash in Iyov, that there is no such thing. So, Lokasha abgufa abereisha. What's described in Iyov is on the head. On the head, the hairs that emanate from the head, no two hairs can emanate from a single follicle. On the other hand, when it comes to the hairs of the body, there, two hairs can emanate from a single follicle, and it won't be an issue. So, I'm reviewed on Mishmo. Shtei se'arot shamru, afilu achat ala kaf, v'chat ala beitzim. The two hairs do not have to be adjacent to each other. You can have one of them that is on the scrotum, and one of them is on the calf, is the area right above the ervav, above the aver. So they don't have to be adjacent, they can be in two separate locations as long as there are shtei se'arot. Tanya nami ochi, we have a brayta that supports that they do not have to be adjacent. Shtei se'arot shemru, afilu achat bigaba, v'achat bikreisa. By a woman, she can even have one on her front, meaning that's right above the area of the erva, the kaf that we mentioned before, which is the chad b'kreisa. And then achad b'gaba on her back doesn't literally mean on her back, but it means below the area of the erva. So you can have these shtei se'arot in two locations, and it would still be considered an indication of puberty. Achad agav kishrei etzbuteh, one on the joints of her shoyad, of her fingers, v'achad agav kishrei etzbuteh shorego, and one on the joints of her toes. So if she has hair and those joints or those areas on the fingers and on the toes, which is an indication you'll only have those hairs if there is pubic hair as well. If you have those shtei se'arot, one on the fingers and one on the toes, that's also an indication of shtei se'arot, even though they're far apart. Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda ish kfar Yakov shamar mishum Rabbi Shimon. Then v'rabbanon amar Rav Ashi, or you have amar Rav Ashi, amar Rav Chista, depends on what the gear says over here. Adju beit se'arot b'makom echad. He requires that there be two hairs in a single location. So we have a machloket amuroim as to whether the shtei se'arot have to be adjacent or the shtei se'arot can be anywhere on the body. So Tana Rabbanan, ad matay abat mima'enet. Until when may a girl, a young girl, perform mi'un? Ad shetavi shtei se'arot, divrei Rabbi Meir. Until she has two se'arot, it's the position of Rabbi Meir, it's the position of the Tana Kama in our Mishnah, which is likely that it's not Mishnah Rabbi Meir. So that's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, and similar here in the Breita, says, Ad shirbe ashachor, until the black predominates or is obvious over there. Rabbi Yossi omer, Ad shetakif atara, until the crown is filled in. Now there are different interpretations about this. Some say that means that it's talking about the crown of the breast, meaning that area, the circle around the nipple that is a different color already fully develops. Or others say that it means down below in the Makom Erva that there is already some sort of semicircle or crown of hairs. I mean, it's not just two hairs, but a whole area that is covered. Ben Shlakot Omer, the son, which is an interesting name here, the son of cooked vegetables, but his name was Ben Shlakot Omer Ad Shetichalkel, until she is Tichalkel. Rashi says, I do not know, I do not have a mesorah as to what this word means. Then Rashi over here speculates about what the Tichalkel is. He has two explanations. One which he rejects is that it's with a bet, shetibalbel, meaning that it's so big that it's able to curl up or turn over. And Rashi rejects that explanation. Techalkel, he brings a quote from the Gemara in Shabbat that kilkul is some sort of mousse or hair product that the girls used to use for their peyot, for the area around their sideburns, atzada, bat atzada, to keep them or paste them down. And over there, it was an indication of large amount of hair. And so over here, techalkel and Tosavot seconds that, means lashon gidul seyarhu, a language of a lot of hair or a growing of hair in that area. So that would be even more than that statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon, matzani chanina ben hachinai bitzidan. Shimon says, I found Rabbi Chanina in Tzidan. V'amar, kishata magia itzal Rabbi Akiva. When you go to visit Rabbi Akiva, amurlo, please say to him, ad matai abad menet, ask him the question, based on the same question that was raised by this Tosefta. Im yomar lecha shetavish tei sarot, if he answers you what I think he will, that it's two sarot, amurlo alo ben shlakot heid, b'mamad kulchem b'yavna, din ben shlakot, give testimony in front of all the chachamim that were in Yavna, ad shetichalkel, velo amartim lo davar, and nobody responded, nobody said that that was wrong. Shabbat itzal Rabbi Akiva. So when I came to Rabbi Akiva Amarli, kilkul ze eni odea mahu. Says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what this kilkul is. Rashi says, klamar lo severely. I don't hold of it. Ben shlakot eni mekir. I don't know who this person ben shlakot is. So whether he literally didn't know, or he was not acknowledging that there was such an event, or the halacha should be such. Either way, so ad matai abat memanet, ad shetivi bet sarot. Until what period of time may the young girl perform miun? Is until shtei sarot, like that of psak halacha of Rabbi Meir, and also what we saw in the first amud of Nimnu v'gamru, that they came together and came to the conclusion that shtei sarot is the determining factor over here. So now, the Mishnah says, shtei sarot amurot bipara ubnigayim v'amurot b'chol makom. Whenever the Gemara or the Mishnah talks about shtei sarot, about para, para duma means that there are two black hairs that make it pasul to be a para duma. By nigayim, we have numerous types of hairs. If you have two white hairs, it makes the nega tameh. If you have two black hairs, it makes it tahor. If you have yellow hairs in some instances, it makes it tameh. All those hairs that are mentioned there, those two hairs, v'amurot b'chol makom, anywhere, including our case over here, what is the size of those two hairs? So, kedei lakuf rasham liikran, divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says they have to be long enough that you can turn the head of the hair back to its root. And they have to be long enough that you can curl back the head back to its root. Rabbi Lezer Omer, kedei lekrotz bitziporen. It has to be long enough that you can grab a hold of it with your nails. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, kedei she'e nitalot bizug. It has to be long enough that they can be taken out with a pair of scissors, that they can cut off with a pair of scissors. So here you have different sizes of what the hair is. And Amar Chista Amar Ukva, alocha kedivrei kulan achmir. The alocha is like all of these, to be the machmir. That means that from the time that they can be pulled out by your nails, which is the shortest one, lo mima'enet. At that point already, she can't perform miyun, because maybe she's already considered to be of age. And in terms of chalitza, where she has to be of age to perform chalitza, then you have to have the largest size of that, which is either likely something that can be caught by a scissor or folded back. Rashi, it's unclear here which one. At one point in the Mishnah, he says, shiur rabo, that they, cutting with the scissors is the largest size. So until you reach all three, if you clear all three of these qualifications, she will not be classified as a gdola to perform a chalitza. Tosafot, interesting over here, points out the halacha. This is what we should do. It says, Hilkach, eino choletzet ad shedivi se'ar gadol shebikulan. She doesn't perform chalitza like Rashi says until she has the largest size of hair that's mentioned in the Mishnah. V'adshu bet sarot b'makom echad. And also until she has two hairs in one place, kiravashi. Because what kulan achmir means, not only are we going to be machmir with regards to the length of the hairs, but also the location of the hairs. She's not considered to be an absolute gedolah, where chalitza and all the dinim of age will apply until we have the longest of the requirements mentioned in our Mishnah in terms of hair, as well as the most stringent view of where those hairs are located, which is ravashi, that they have to be adjacent in one location. Tosfot says, just qualifies this, we saw this earlier in the Tosfot again, Zimieshla Dadim Dolim, if her breasts are already fully developed, Kishar Nashim, like any other woman, ain't Srikhalib Do, Katachton. You don't have to check it all, then you know for certain that this girl has reached the age of puberty. Velote Ma'in, on the other hand, in terms of Miyun, when does she get disqualified from foreign Miyun? Is Kishivia Shtesarot Ktanot, when she has the lowest threshold of two hairs, Vafilo Achat Begabav, Achat Ben Kishreetz Butel. It doesn't matter where it's located. Meaning, even if they are two separate hairs in two different locations, because again, we're going to go both the Achmir and both sides. So Machmir on the side of when she's no longer a Katan,
will be a case of the shortest hairs in the furthest location. And Achmir, until we want to be sure that she is of age, that'll be the longest hairs in the closest proximity. Rabbeinu Tam Ketab B'Sefer Yashar, Shkia L'Klau Shnota Lo Tema'in B'Zman Hazeh. In our days, that once she reaches the age, meaning 12 years in one day, she should no longer perform miyun. Even though in our Gemara it's clear if she did not have bi'ah yet, that we saw said before in our Gemara as well as in the previous perek, that she can still perform miyun. Because we don't worry about the fact that we don't find hairs there, that maybe they fell out. Nevertheless, ein anu b'kiim livdok b'chol gufa. We are not experts at checking for these types of hairs, these pubic hairs. Shelo yele sarut, that she has no hair. Tafilo achai begabav, achai bekresa, one on each side of her. Ubikishu etzbutah, mitztafim, or gumot greater, or maybe even just hair follicles is enough. So because of that, he says, we don't check anymore. So as soon as they come of age, we don't allow miyun. In order to be qualified to be a gadola, in terms of chalitza, she'll need the most stringent, which means the longest hairs, in the closest proximity. We are machmir l'shnei hatzdadim. Okay, now next mishnah, which take us back into Hilchot Nida, which is Harui Ketem, Harizim Umuku Kelet. A woman who sees a stain during her Yimei Ziva, that messes her up, it makes it difficult for her. Husheshit Mishum Zov, and she has to worry about the fact that she might be a Zavagdola. Divrei Rabbi Meir, Vachachamim Amrim, Ein Ketanim Mishum Zov. Tamim, don't count towards Zov. Okay, and we'll get back to this, the Gemara is going to explain this. Man Chachamim, who is the author of the position of the Chachamim in our Mishnah? Where it says, Rabbi Chanina ben Intigunusi. Rabbi Chanina ben Intigunus, Titania, we have a bright, authored by Rabbi Chanina ben Intigunus, Omer, Ketamim, Ein Behem Mishum Zov. That Ketamim have no place with regards to Zov. Upamim, Shak Tamim, Mevim Lidei Ziva. But there are times where Ketamim do bring a woman to the point where she is a Zava, Ketzad. So now I'm going to explain this, and this is going to qualify a little bit the statement of the Chachamim in the Mishnah. Lavsha Gimel Chalukot Habdukot. She wore three different pairs of clothing during her Yimei Ziva. Umatzah Lehem Ketem. On each day, she finds on them a stain. Oh, Sherata Bet Yamim. Or, for the first 2 days of her Yimei Ziva, she has sightings of Damim. And then, on the last day of a Chaluk Echad, she wore a clean beget, and she sees a Ketem on them. Hein, hein, akatamim, avim lidei ziva. That type of stain can bring a woman to be a zava. She saw damim 3 days in a row. And in that instance, we'd be choshesh from the ketem. Ketem is only a din dirabanan. If you remember when we spoke earlier in the introduction to nida, many times nida, that a woman is only classified as a nida when she has a hargasha, she has a sense of dam leaving the mekor, and she actually has a sighting of damim. So that's what makes a woman nida or zava min haTorah. The Rabbanan were gozer with regards to ketamim, regards to stains, that since that's an indication of those items, that they are also mitameh. So over here, she'll be choshesha to being a zavag dola in an instance where the damim, there's good evidence of the fact that they have been separate flows over here. So now the Gemara speaks parenthetically, which is hashtash, losha chalukot, telav mikuva kachazia chashinan. If we worry about the case where she had three separate begadim on three separate days, and she had stains, and we say there we're choshesh that she is a zavag dola, then bet yamim v'chaluk echad mibayi? What does the breita then have to bring a case of where she has two actual sightings and one stain? Why over there would you have to bring? Obviously, if you see three stains, which is all midorabanan, we're choshesh, in a case where she has two sightings that are midoraita and then one sighting midorabanan, of course she doesn't need to. So when it says, no, madutei makoki ay gavna mevia korban v'ne'achal. An instance where she has two sightings, and on the third sighting it's already a ketem, over there we're going to say that there's circumstantial evidence that she's really having a flow. And when she brings her korban olan chatat for the completion of her shiva nikiim after being a zavag dola, that chatat may be eaten by the kohanim. There's so much circumstantial evidence that she really was a real zavag dola. In that instance, I think she would have the chatat would be brought, not ala safek, but bevadai, and the kohanim can eat it. Not like the instance where we have three sightings on a ketem. Over there it's all midrabanan, and she brings a chatat only mi-chashash, mi-safek. And therefore the chatat is brought, but not eaten by the kohanim. Because the way the chatat is shechted is through milika. Milika works by kodashim, and the kohanim can eat it. But if it's chulin, milika makes it into a nevela. And if that's the case, then the kohanim can't eat it. So when it's a safek, we don't allow the kohanim to eat it. So I would have thought that we would have made such a distinction, kamash malan, that there is no such distinction. Any korban that's brought because of a ketem is automatically a safek, and because it's a safek, the kohanim do not eat it.
It's just important to note here that many of the Rishonim disagree with Rashi, including the Ramban,
Because here we're all talking on a level de Rabbanan. So why are you talking about Karbanot? When the Gemara says here, Kamash Milan, it's not Kamash Milan that she brings a Korban a Safek. It's Kamash Milan she doesn't bring a Korban at all. Because we're talking about a Safek Midi Rabbanan. On the other hand, you might have to say something for Rashi, where Rashi believes that since the Korban Zavah can be brought ala Safek, then maybe even when it's a Safek de Rabbanan, we let her bring such a Korban because she is Mukhzeket Bidamim.
Amar Rava Baha, Zakhinu Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos de Rabbanan. Rava says, with this position, Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos could be Menetzeach, be victorious over the Chachamim in terms of his position. Maishna, Pachot mi Gimel Grisim b'makom Echad. If you have less than three Gris, Gris is the minimum amount of Damim that you need to cite in order to be classified as a Nida through a Ketem, through a stain. The Gris is like the size of a bean, but large enough that it can no longer be suspected that this came from a makolet, from a louse. It's something that's big enough where we're sure that she had some sort of stain over here. So what the Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos says, if you have less than three grease in one place, t'lo chashinan, Chamim agree that if you don't have less than three grease, then we don't worry about her being a zavag dola, damrinan, betray yomei chazitei, because we say that the problem is that she saw it over a number of days. She saw it over a number of days, that means on one of the days it was less than a grease. It was less than the minimum shear for a ketem. If that's the case, then she's not, we don't suspect that she is a Zavah Gdola. But Shlosha, Grisim, B'makom Echad. But when you do have that amount, the sufficient shear in one location, in one Beged, Nami Neima, Tarti Pagla Megufa, let's say 2.5 of those Grisim came out of her body. Chazite, V'ida Chagav, Zuma, Dam, Makoletu. And because of the Dam Nida, it attracted the lice to come over there. And the last half of Gris came from the crushing of a louse on her Beged. So let's say that, and then you'll be below the minimum shear. If, when you have less than three grisim, you agree that we suspect that it came out from her body on multiple days and therefore it's not classified as a ketem, yet over here, when you have a full three, say the same thing. You can subdivide it in a way that 2.5 came out of her body and the other half wasn't from her body. And again, you won't reach the minimum shear of three grisim over 3 days. Rabbanan, the Rabbanan would respond to him, came into ikal defluge begris ve'o d'chol yoma lo talina. And since there's sufficient amount of staining over here for a grease and a little more on every day, we don't all of a sudden introduce the issue of a louse. Very Rabbi Chanina ben Tignos, Gimel Grisim b'makom echad hu d'lo chashinan, habe gimel makomot chashinan. For it's the way that Rava presents this statement of Rabbi Chanina ben Tignos, it sounds like Rabbi Chanina ben Tignos is only questioning the Rabbanan's position when they have three stains in a single location. But if we have three stains in different locations, we would be choshesh. We already quoted Rav Chanina ben Antigonos in a braita before, begimel chalukot in, that if it's on three separate begadim, that was the example brought in the braita, that was on three separate begadim. Begimel makomot, lo. But when it comes to three different locations on a single beged, Rav Chanina ben Antigonos would not agree that there's a question about a zavag dola. So our answer is no, that this statement would be the divrayam di rabbanan kamar. He's speaking in the words of the rabbanan. Says, Lididi, for me, begimel chalukot in, begimel makamot lo. Comes to three separate begadim. If she has a stain on each beged on each day, then I agree that we're choshesh that she is a zavah gdola. But if it's three stains on a single beged, I'm not worried about it. Eladidchu, but according to you, Rabban, in the shitatchem, odoli miha, you should at least agree, the hecha, the chazai gimel grisim b'makom echad, that if she sees three grisim in one location, darmin and treo pago megufa chazite, that maybe even when she has three on a single beged, we could suspect that not all of that came out of her body. And that would be less than the minimum shear of kagris for each day. And then we would not be choshesh that she is a zavag dola. Rabbanan respond and say, came into equally fluge begris vote. Since she can, we have enough damim here. We have a quantity that can be divided up into a gris and a little more for each day. And therefore we are not tole with the makolet. We don't introduce this issue of makolet anymore. So Tan Rabbanan, we have a bright aroeh ketem imesh bo gdei lachalei gimel grisim shehen kagris v'od. If a woman has sustains on her beged and it's sufficient amount or sufficient quantity to split up into three different grisim and a little more, then choseshet, we worry about the fact that she saw this over 3 days and that she says zavag dola. V'im lav, eno choseshet. If it's less than that quantity, we don't worry about it. Yehuda ben Igra Omer Mishum Rabbi Yossi Achad Zu V'Achad Zu Choseshet. Either way, we worry about it. Even if it's less than that minimum shiur of three kugrisim, we worry about it. Rashi explains, why is it Achad Zu V'Achad Zu we worry about it? Because he says that Riat Ben Hashmashot Ola L'Shnei Yamim. Possibility that she had two sightings. She had one sighting on a first day, And then on the second day, between the second day and third day, Benesh Mashot, she has the second Kegris sighting. And having a Benesh Mashot will qualify as a sighting both for the second day and the third day. She'll still have three sightings, even though there are only two Grisim there. And therefore, he's Choshesh, even with a less than that minimum quantity of three Grisim. So Amar Rabbi Nirim Divrei Rabbi Yehuda Ben Igra B'Shelo Badka. Rabbi Yehuda Ben Igra's statement makes sense. B'Shelo Badka, when she didn't check herself. V'Divrei Chachamim B'Shebadka. And Chachamim's position makes sense when she did check herself. Tomorrow's daf will deal with exactly what the Badka means. What Badka means, her Beged or herself. And we'll stop over here and we'll continue with this Gemara tomorrow.